originally they were worn by courtesans to keep their dresses up out of the mud, so they'd wear these heels. But eventually, over time, they became a status symbol, so the taller you were, the more wealthy you were. And it became quite ridiculous. Some of them were like 20 inches tall.
I would buy that.
Yeah, yeah. Really?
I would. When you're 4'11", I would buy it.
Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry Maxtay, and each week I, my co-host, and our guest propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. In the immortal words of Madonna, Greta Garbo, Anne Munro, Dietrich and DiMaggio, Marlon Brando, Jimmy Dean, on the cover of a magazine, Grace Kelly, Harlow, Jean, picture of a beauty queen, Jean Kelly, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, Dance on Air, Vogue, beauty's where you find it. But if you can't find it, there's always Worst Foot Forward. And with me, as ever, is the teen to my Vogue, the Mary to my Claire, and the Harper to my Bizarre. It's Ben Vandeveld.
Hello, Barry.
You're right, buddy.
Yeah, I have to say, you absolutely nailed that much better than when we did the hip-hop episode.
I have been practicing that. Oh my gosh, where are we recording today, Ben?
We are recording in Portcullis House, and for our non-British listeners, that means that I can look out the window and I can see Big Ben and the Houses of Parliament.
Yep, it's the home of British fashion itself. I hear wigs and gowns are in this year.
Yeah, they
and high stockings.
And we're all sat here with a nice red briefcase as
yeah.
well. And because our guest this week is very limited for time, we're going to get right on and introduce her. She was born in London, but had very much a global childhood, growing up in Bangladesh, Brunei, India, Singapore and Spain. And she comes from a remarkable political legacy. Her grandfather, Sheikh Mujibur Rahman, was the first president of Bangladesh, and her aunt, Sheikh Hasina Wazid, is the current Prime Minister of Bangladesh. Wow. I don't think we've got anyone whose auntie is so powerful who's
no.
been a guest on this.
Not yet.
And because of these connections, it meant that as a child she met both Nelson Mandela and visited the White House. Since she was a 16-year-old, she joined the Labour Party and has immersed herself in politics, working for Amnesty International, Save the Children, as well as working on Ed Miliband's leadership campaign and Barack Obama's 2008 presidential campaign. In 2015, she got into Parliament the hard way, winning the seat of Hampstead and Kilburn, which was the most closely contested seat in the country. It had a 42-person margin, and she won with over 1,000. She hammered the living daylights out of the Tories in 2017 by winning a 15,000-plus majority. She is your MP.
She is.
She was the MP for my old comedy club, and she is Tulip Sadiq. Hello, Tulip.
Hello. I was just going to say, when you guys were talking about high fashion, you know that politics is also the showbiz for ugly people. You may have noticed when you walked
no.
in.
No. Come on.
I mean, in that case, it's running stand-up comedy a very close second.
We've all seen Vince Cable's hat.
Yeah, that's true.
And Jeremy's hat. Topical.
Absolutely. No comments. Yep.
Who would you say is your most fashionable colleague in the house?
I would say Chico Mona. Where's the
Chico.
Best suits.
Yes.
They're absolutely tailored to a T. So I would say no. He looks good because of his fitted suits, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah.
I suggested to my husband that he asks Chica where he gets his suits tailored. That suggestion didn't go down very well.
Oh, well, never mind. You're fronting up very well for the family.
Who's the most eccentric dresser in Parliament, do you think?
Blackrod. It's definitely Blackrod.
Yeah, it's probably Blackrod. I mean, Jacob Rees-Mogg's suits are strange.
Uh-huh.
Particularly the suits of armour.
And ill-fitting. Slightly. So, yeah, he's strange. What I would say, I may not agree with her, but Theresa May dresses very well.
Mm.
I would say.
Yeah,
she dresses
she's
very
pretty
well.
Sharp.
She's a pretty sharp dresser. But not that I agree with anything she says.
but it's nice to look at what she's saying. We always ask every guest on the show what they're worst at in the world. What would you say that you're worst at?
Driving.
Really?
I mean, I didn't even need to hesitate for that one. I am a very bad driver. I mean, I have passed my test, can I just say?
Okay.
It took a few times to pass it, but I am a very nervous driver.
Okay.
I hesitate a lot, and I have people occasionally rolling down the window shouting at me because I never quite know when to go or not in the junction. Because I mean, I know I should be going, but I'm just not sure if I should.
Do you? Yeah. Is trying to get into government and eventually become a minister just so you can get a ministerial driver?
I would say that would be a very good
advantage. You're playing a very long game.
Just so listeners know, Tulip is going to be planning to try and lobby to pedestrianise the entirety of Hampstead and Kilburn so she can stroll wherever she wants.
I really panic when I'm playing like computer console games like the Wii or something, and like, because I feel like that's the... Because I don't drive. I feel like if I can't like press A star or something at the same time, then I'm not going to be able to handle like a clutch and an accelerator and a steering wheel.
I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but the only time when I did ride a quad bike, I managed to fall and injure my knee and I had an operation off the back of it. So it does prove just how bad my driving is. My 7-year-old niece was fine on the quad bike, but I wasn't. So driving is not something you would trust me to do.
Yeah, at least it's easier for you, because being Labour, being on the left is a bit easier than if you were Tory. You'd have to be prefer to drive on the right.
That's true. I think with my constituency, though, I'm lucky. You can walk or take the train everywhere.
Yeah,
so, but imagine if I was an MP for somewhere where they didn't have very good transport links.
One of the massive constituencies
exactly.
in Scotland or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, exactly. No, I wouldn't. It's cheaper everywhere.
You just have to do what Jacob does and saddle up the horse and ride off over to the borderlands.
You know when you said worst at, what are you worst at? Mm. I just remembered something else other than driving, which was I'm worst at identifying famous people.
I've got the same thing.
So let me tell you a story.
Go
where
on.
I was filming for Daily Politics and I was in the green room and I was sitting next to a man because in the green room you can watch who's inside before you, right?
Yes.
So there's a screen where I'm watching Boris Johnson, and the man next to me is sitting there imitating Boris Johnson, like, ho, ho, ha, ha. And I looked at him and I was like, you're really good. You should do this for a living. And it was Rory Bremner, so probably didn't go down very well. And the guy who works for me was standing there like, don't say this. So I was very bad at that. And then the number of famous people who live in Hampstead and Kilburn.
Of course, yeah.
And they expect me to know them.
Yeah.
I have no idea who they are. Like, absolutely no idea who they are. But I think maybe the worst bit was when I didn't know who Justin Bieber was. So he did come to Camden. I didn't know who he was.
I know.
That's bad, isn't it?
There goes the youth vote.
There goes the youth vote. I know Stormzy, though.
That's good.
That might
yeah.
win me some votes. But yeah, no. More than driving, I think I am very bad at identifying famous people, and if you live in a place like Hampstead and Kilburn, you represent it, you should really know at least the A-list celebrities, right?
That's very true.
Definitely.
Yeah. Just your Tim Burtons and your Helena Bonham Carters and so on.
Yeah, just don't pretend to.
This week we are discussing, at Tulip's suggestion, the world's worst fashion accessory, hence the emphasis on fashion. And Ben and I feel overly qualified to talk about this topic, of course. We walked into the gates of Portcullis House and I think we fit right in our hoodies and high tops. Ben, you're going to lead us off, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Now, you chatted to me before about the haircuts episode. I am going to have to start with a tiny mea culpa, because when I was about 20, I was mostly bedecked in fashion from Cyberdog. Do you guys know Cyberdog?
Oh yeah, there's one of them in Camden, isn't there? In the market.
Yeah. It's cyberpunk. It's lots of glow-in-the-dark, flashy, bleepy clothes. And I thought what I really needed to get the girls flocking towards me was a tight black t-shirt with a screen on it, a digital screen that you could program to say whatever you wanted.
Yes. What did you say?
Mostly I said things will tell jokes for beer. But that thing did, because it was on a Velcro top. I was on holiday in Mexico with my brother and two drunk girls just stole it and ran off into the sunset. And I imagine they're now sat like still on the side of the curb in Mexico trying to program different things. Yesterday I was very close to here. I popped to the National Gallery. I saw there a painting by Peter Paul Rubens, who is an artist who I've always known the name of, but I could never point out his paintings. And it's of the Infanta Isabella, who is the daughter of Philip II, and she's looks very beautiful, got a gorgeous gold brocade on her dress, and the biggest ruff you have ever seen in your life. This thing is about 12 inches in diameter, and it looks like she's just had torso surgery and is being told not to bite her stitches. This thing was called a cartwheel ruff, and they were so so large they needed to have like scaffolding underneath them.
They had
to
little
keep
like wire supports and things, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And they were, I mean, and I picked them out specifically because they were gender neutral clothing. Both men and women had ruffs, and they look so ridiculous. And the thing that I most dislike about ruffs is that they were so impractical, and that was worn as a badge of pride.
Yeah.
Because you could only wear them once, because they'd lose like the starchiness and they'd all sort of collapse in on themselves. It showed how rich you were if you could have one. Elizabeth I was very particular about what colours they should use. They were often yellow or pink or mauve, but woe betide anyone who dyed their ruff blue.
Right.
Because if they were blue, then that would mean that you were allied with Scotland, and Elizabeth I was not, particularly with Mary, Queen of Scots, hanging around trying to depose her. My favourite thing about ruffs that grew so large, though, is a writer called Philip Stubbs from the period, who described that in bad weather, people's ruffs strike sail and down they fall like dishcloths fluttering in the wind.
So they'd be picked up and flown over.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. It's like sort of like an Elizabethan version of poo sticks, where you drop two Elizabethan nobles and they just swift down the high street.
That's so, when Drake was facing the Armada. I don't have enough ships. Get me the Earl of Buckingham.
And strap him to the mast. Another thing I find out about, also from a similar sort of age, I ended up looking at badges of shame. This is a little bit further on. In 1697, in the Poor Act, the government forced poor people to have blue or red badges sewn onto their sleeves to identify themselves as being poor, so that they basically couldn't do benefits claimed.
Wow.
People would basically turn up and try and claim poor relief.
Take a Rees-Mogg's great-great-great-great-granddad.
Yeah, just suddenly in an office in Portcullis House, a little, I was going to say a light bulb's gone on above his head, but clearly a tiny candle has gone on above his head. Then I started finding out about something called a scold's bridle. Do you know what this is?
No. This isn't the thing that keeps your tongue down, is it?
Yeah.
For nagging wives.
Precisely that. So
this is a bit close to home.
Yeah, I hope you won't give your husband any ideas. No. Or my wife any ideas.
He comes in here with another one of Chuck O'Mona's soup.
So the Scold's Bridle, it was also known as the Witch's Bridle, the Branks Bible, or the Gossip's Bridle. And it was, you could get sort of a practical version, which was a mask that you put on your wife's face, and it had a bit of metal that would go into the mouth, and if you moved your tongue, it would either poke a hole in it or lacerate it. But some of them are so ornate. There's one I found online that sort of looks like a wild boar's head.
Yeah.
Obviously, because if you're going to pop a device on your wife's head to shut her up, at least she can be a nice ornament at the same time.
She wants to look well while not be seen well and not heard.
A similar device I found is something called the shrew's fiddle or the neck viola, which is basically, it's the shape of a violin, and you pop the head in the big hole and then your hands on either side of it.
Oh, wow.
And it doesn't shut you up, but it stops you getting in a bit of fisticuffs. The use of the scold's bridle was still on the statute books in Scotland until what year, do we think?
Oh, it's going to be obnoxiously near, isn't it?
It like will be.
The 90s.
No, it's not that bad. 1967.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the, you were alive then.
Yeah, I was, just about. That was, around the same time they were decriminalising homosexuality and so on. And, you know what, we should let women speak as well.
Equality for the world.
Yeah.
One final weird thing that I found before I get on to my choice. The Mayans. Now, one famous thing that the Mayans did with their kids was when they were tiny little children, they put plates on their skulls to elongate the skulls. And it's where some of the myths about aliens landing in South America come from, because they found the skulls which look like cone heads.
Yes, yeah.
One thing I didn't know about is that they used to hang marbles in front of the eyes of infants to try and make them cross-eyed.
What?
Because the Mayan sun god Kinich-Awa was also cross-eyed.
Wait, hang on. They invented, and let's be honest, they invented a god who was the god of the sun, but decided, you know what this god needs is to be cross-eyed.
Yeah,
an all-seeing being, seeing in the wrong directions.
Mm-hmm. I've got no idea why he's cross-eyed, and it's either because he's like making his own eyes be dazzled by his own brightness,
yeah.
or maybe he's looking at tomorrow and looking at yesterday. I don't know.
That's a more poetic excuse, because I'm now thinking, why didn't early Christians decide God had a club foot or something? And so they would hang these marbles, and that would make their eyes.
The marble hung in between their eyes,
so the
baby would focus, and they would become cross-eyed, sort of into the middle of the nose rather than to either side.
Oh, wow. Dangerous Mayan pedestrian crossing. One thing I know about the Mayans is that they used to wear beetles as brooches, didn't they?
Yes.
They just used to pin beetles, live beetles, to themselves because they'd be brightly coloured and so on.
In China, over the past sort of 10, 20 years, there's been a horrible fashion of getting little plastic bags full of sort of formaldehyde and putting live tiny lizards in it.
Yeah.
Just really, really horrible stuff. And you'd think that's the sort of thing that has been a passing fad.
You do know I have a phobia of lizards, right? Is this why you're saying this?
No.
I thought someone tipped you off.
No, not at all.
A serious phobia.
That's like, apparently there's a story that Vladimir Putin found out that Angela Merkel has got a phobia of dogs, and so when they first met, he turned up with a dog.
Oh my god, okay, yeah. And this is the equivalent.
Yeah,
anyway. We did not have lizards on.
We did not have lizards on.
They were taken from set security.
There's luckily, who knew that Portcullis House had a vivarium downstairs that they could hide them inside? But no, in New York City in 1894, there became a fashion for wearing tiny lizards. They said they were chameleons, they weren't all chameleons. And the idea was that you wear a chameleon, it will blend into what you're wearing. There were over 10,000 of them in New York City in 1894, and campaigners sort of tried to get rid of that. By the 1920s, ladies were wearing leaf lizards in their hair. And there is a story from the Atlanta Constitution, a newspaper, that says, goodbye to our pretty hair ornaments, but at least the men will feel safer. For at a recent dance, it is stated that when beset by a Druid Hills girl started to whisper sweet nothings into his ear, and the chameleon became loosened from her hair and fell into the man's mouth. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
You are doing this on purpose now.
And again, this is astonishing how recently these were allowed, because even in 1966, in like a Boy's Own magazine in America, they were being offered as a piece of jewellery for them to wear.
I saw that advert. The great thing about it is they gave you a life guarantee of 3 years, whether they'd say for at least three years. And if it didn't, you could send away the corpse of the lizard and get a new one.
Oh my god. Okay, guys, you're really pushing my limits now, okay?
We're going to leave the lizards behind.
Okay, we'll move away from lizards, but I am sad to tell you that my choice is something that is almost as horrible. We're going to Jerusalem, and a fashion designer called Naomi Kishner. And when she was studying on her undergraduate course, she came up with the idea of invasive jewellery. I'll be gentle. Her thinking
invading
behind...
Invading which part of your body?
Don't worry, above the waist.
Okay,
Her thinking behind this is insane. She's basically trying to explore the idea that we're living in a world where energy resources are becoming less and less and less. But one untapped energy resource she suggests is the human body.
Okay.
So the three pieces she put up was the E-pulse conductor, which has two little sharp pins, and you stick it in the back of your neck, and it uses the electric current from your spine to power other things. There is the blinker, which looks like a big, thick pince-nez, which you put on the bridge of your nose, and it uses the power of you blinking.
Wow.
And the creepiest one is the blood bridge, which you insert in your in the vein in your wrist. And again, it's just two little spikes go in there, and the blood pumps through there and pumps through basically a little water wheel, and the vascular power...
That's bonkers!
Oh, wow.
Like, the fact that she clearly hasn't watched The Matrix, where the whole bloodline is that human beings are basically glorified batteries, terrifies me.
So, when I started thinking about this, I asked a few of my friends, and it was quite embarrassing because they named some things which I own, but anyway. So, quite a few of them said scrunchies. Because Sex and the City basically said you can tell if a woman is old-fashioned or out of date or from the 90s if she wears a scrunchie.
Yes.
And I own seven of them, so I quietly stayed away from that one. Then shoulder pads. Shoulder pads was mentioned quite a lot from the 80s.
They're so incredible.
They are, but then if you're 4'11", like me, and you want to appear a bit bigger than the men in the chamber, then, yeah. You know, there's no other option. So that was a bit embarrassing well. Then one of my female MPs said leg warmers. And sometimes I wear leg warmers, I have to say. If it's really cold, there's a beast from the east, then you have to have,
of course, you
know, leg warmers. Okay.
You're like a walking fashion museum.
Then my sister said it was these stupid shoe boots, which are basically not a shoe or a boot, but in between. Oh. So it's a toss between... You want to wear a shoe, but then you also want to wear boots. So
they've got the slit in the back.
They've got a slit in the back, and
they look unfinished.
They just look unfinished, and what's the point of them?
Yeah.
You either wear shoes or you wear boots. But I think my personal favourite were the bum bags, which everyone kept mentioning.
Oh, yeah.
So, in terms of the bum bags, have you seen the tourists wearing them? Oh, it's mostly tourists wear them.
It's usually Americans.
and to be fair, though, bum bags are making a comeback.
Yes, they are. But I just want to... Even the name. So in Germany, they're called belly bags. In France, they're called banana bags. And they're also called fanny packs.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, are we really suggesting that this is a good thing to have around your waist, just depending on the name?
I'm just going
to
reach into my fanny pack.
Exactly, there you go.
It's not a great sentence.
Exactly.
So, also, they just advertise where your belongings are.
That's the thing. And they look very undignified. And they... I don't know why people use them. Why don't you just have either a backpack or a normal handbag that you walk around in? Why must you have a bum bag?
Yeah.
And that seems to be the one that all my friends agreed on. Was just not... Not something, but did you know they've been in use in many cultures and the origin was Native American buffalo pouch,
really?
Which was used instead of sewing pockets into clothing.
Ah, that's so cool.
But would you wear one? I don't think even
if it was,
with my faux pas I would.
If it had the sort of the Native American seal of approval.
Would you?
rather than, you know, some polystyrene polyester blend.
Yeah, that's the thing. They also look kind of horrible.
Yeah, they're always
like... This discussion can be quite personal because when I started talking to my friends about it, they started naming lots of things. And bearing in mind, and I don't admit this very often, I was a bit of a goth when I was younger.
Were you?
This was very dangerous territory because I was thinking, if someone looks back on my photos, and luckily there was no Facebook, they're going to see me in all of the clothes they're describing. So that was, I had my Nirvana t-shirt and my Guns N' Roses t-shirt.
Did you have a bum bag?
I didn't.
Okay, that's good.
But did I want one? I probably did want one, to be fair.
Goth with a bum bag is a strange
look,
that
would
to
be
honest.
I did.
What are you keeping here? My hopes and dreams.
Exactly.
When I was a teenager, I hung out in Hippie Green in Newcastle, which bafflingly is where all the goths lived. And I was too technical to be a goth, but there was a 6'6" goth called Kenny, who would go around in a big long black trench coat, but Kenny also liked going rollerblading while still dressed as a goth. And nothing is less scary than a goth on wheels.
You're right, absolutely. Then the other thing one of my very good friends said is she thought fascinators were dreadful.
Yeah.
I wore a fascinator to her wedding. Yes. So when she said that, I was like, I went to your wedding a few months ago and I was wearing a fascinator. So yeah, this can bring out lots of emotive expressions from female friends.
The fascinators at Royal Ascot are always, pardon the pun, fascinating, where people go out of the way to have like, oh, I've got a plate and fish and chips on my head.
Yes, that's true.
A London bus.
Mine are less elaborate, to be fair. But I'm not, if she gets married again, who knows? You never know. I'm not going to wear one, that's for sure.
I feel like we've started some sort of feud now.
Yeah.
You're like, I wore a fascinator to your next wedding.
And it's just a giant middle finger.
Didn't Lars did it the first one.
No.
Maybe I should have that written on there. But it became quite a controversial thing to talk to your friends about.
Yeah.
I didn't ask any of my male friends, to be fair. I didn't ask, so I don't know if I would have had a different response. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe.
Do you want to talk about you said initially Wars was handbag. Is there any particular reason? Was it bum bags in particular, or do you find handbags a burden, or are they useful?
I mean, I live my life for handbags,
yeah.
So no, I don't. I don't find them a burden. What I probably find, I suppose, I have bum bags is the main problem,
yeah.
If you like.
Cool.
But with handbags, it's a fascinating topic because you never quite know if you should take a handbag that's big enough for the whole day or take one that's small enough, but then will there be a cloakroom to put the rest of your stuff?
Yeah.
And the main problem in being in London is a brolly. Do you put your umbrella in it? Do you carry it? And then there's hats and gloves and blah, blah, blah. So I'm in love with my handbags. I mean, you don't want to get me started on my handbags.
No, we wondered if it was going to be a segue into talking about Margaret Thatcher. We were speculating as to whether the world's worst handbag was the handbag Thatcher was carrying.
No.
During the sinking of the Belgrano.
Funny you should say that now. But in terms of handbags, I do try and not get too obsessed with them, but if you speak to most of my friends, you'll see we have a shared appreciation of equal rights, feminism, catering for people who are vulnerable, and handbags.
I would vote for that manifesto.
Okay, good.
Similarly to you, I found out some stuff that reacts to the human body. You know the way that these like cat ears are very popular at the moment, the little headbands with little cute cat ears, particularly they're sort of drawing from the kawaii Japanese sort of vogue for cuteness. There is a company that sells basically cat ears that react to your reactions and emotions. So if you're feeling sad, they'll turn downwards, and if you're alert, they'll turn side on. They're called Nico Mimi. They respond to your brainwaves. And the same company have developed something called a Shippo, which is a realistic wagging tail.
Okay, I think what we need to do is fit all members of parliament with those.
Yeah,
because you'll immediately tell when someone's lying.
The ad for the Shippo is really creepy because it's two sort of Japanese 20-somethings running into each other in the park, and the girl, sort of her tail is wagging, and a camera pans around and the guy's tail is wagging as well, and you're going, okay, are they happy or are they horny or what's about to happen? It's a little too far.
Isn't that what happens on Tinder?
I imagine that's what it is, whether your tail wags to the right or wags to the left. In China, it's not fashionable to be tanned as much as it is certainly in European cultures. Tanning is meant to be sort of, it shows you've been on holidays, it shows you've enjoyed yourself, you've got leisure time. Whereas in China, it sort of suggests field work and labour and the peasantry. So there was a heat wave a couple of years ago, and people went to the famous beaches of Qingdao. There were pictures of people swimming in the sea with what they were calling face kinis, which are like balaclava swimming hat mask, Mexican wrestler mask. They basically look like they're all members of Pussy Riot on a day at the seaside.
Or all rebelling against Poseidon.
Yeah.
But just to interject on Pussy Riot.
Yes.
So I did actually meet Nadia from Pussy Riot, who I did recognise. I was really happy.
Without the mask? Did you recognise her because she had a mask on?
Not quite. It's just more of her mannerisms, yes. I think. But when I spoke to her, she didn't have a tail wagging. I just wanted to say.
It's a sad pussy.
I
read about some Tudor and Elizabethan fashions.
Uh-huh.
Bombasting. So in the period, you know the way you see all the portraits of Henry VIII and people where they've got the massive sleeves and the massive bellies?
Yeah.
Basically, that is all stuffing. They would stuff rags or even bran into their sleeves to make them look like they had massive Popeye forearms. And they'd stuff their bellies because it would make them look hale and hearty, and then eat, because looking fat meant you'd eaten well. And
this is why I use a shoulder pad, see? There you
go. Exactly.
Yeah,
okay. It's a modern form of bombasting.
You look like you've got really well nourished shoulders.
and it sort of piles into the whole idea of the codpiece as well, because obviously. So I didn't realise why the codpiece came about. In the early days of trousers, you just had like two leggings which weren't connected.
Hmm.
So you'd have to wear like a sort of a rag bit around your waist to cover everything up. And then eventually when they were joined together, they only joined at the back. So you still would have to wear like a little triangular cloth to cover your bits. And so that had evolved into a more ornate item. And then have you seen the Henry VIII's armour in the Tower of London?
Yes.
Where it's got the massive metal codpiece.
Yeah.
And so they became... I read a thing about you would wear a codpiece but not draw attention to the codpiece. Even if someone was looking at the codpiece, you would look directly at their face.
That's a great parlour game, isn't it?
So like you were daring them into it.
I read a lovely thing about like codpieces became more and more ornate under Henry VIII. And then as soon as Elizabeth I got into power, she was like, stop this nonsense immediately. And they all sort of shrunk back down again.
I also read about, so you've probably seen like the wigs that people wore in the 17th and 18th century, the massive ones with all sorts of jewels and flowers in them. And famously, there's the idea of wearing like a galleon in the wig, particularly in France. So I didn't realise why that came about. Basically, in France, the French won a battle with the British, a sea battle with the British during the American War of Independence, the Battle of Ushant. The French ship at this was called La Belle Poule, and it had really done a massive damage to one of the British flagships. And so they wore this hairstyle called coiffure à la Belle Poule, which had like a replica of that specific ship in it to celebrate that sea battle. And so the French won a few more sea battles. They had a very great navy just leading up to the French Revolution. And so they wore these ones with celebrating the French ships in different styles. But Marie Antoinette, who was obviously quite a fan of these famous hairstyles, she went a bit further. Louis XVI got immunized against smallpox, one of the early sort of inoculations. And it was such a success. It had worked and they were all delighted. So she had a hairstyle, a wig made, celebrating his inoculation called coiffure à l'inoculation, which had like a serpent and the staff of Aeschylus in it and an olive tree signifying wisdom.
So, imagine what mine would be, okay.
Yeah, so like, you know, I don't know, a furry wig with a band-aid in it or something.
Yes, exactly.
One other thing I read about before my choice, I was reading about chopines. So these are high heels, obviously the bane of a lot of fashionable women's lives. The chopine was very popular in Venice from the 1400s to the 1700s, and they were these long heeled shoes. They were sort of like wedges nearly. Originally they were worn by courtesans to keep their dresses up out of the mud, so they'd wear these heels, but eventually over time they became a status symbol. So the taller you were, the more wealthy you were. And it became quite ridiculous. Some of them were like 20 inches tall.
I would buy that.
Yeah, really?
I would. When you're 4'11", I would buy it.
I'd love to see you do that and then go play with the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, that's true.
But the people who wore those ones would have to like have servants either side of them that they were supporting because they were so hard to walk on. And they passed a law in 1430 to limit the height to 3 inches, which was promptly ignored by absolutely everybody. And the really fashionable ones were all in ones, and they were nicely ornate and carved heels. But like some people would just go, they just sew a slipper onto a chunk of cork, and so they look completely mismatched. But they want to, then it'd be hidden under the dress, and no one'd be able to see. Then the ones that were worn in China and Greece weren't the full. The wedge in the Venetian ones were the full length. But the ones in China and Greece, which were popular at the same time, just had like a pillar in the middle of the foot. So not you weren't balancing on the full length, you were balancing on these little tiny stilts underneath your feet.
What wearing high heels is like.
Yeah, it's a friend. I have worn them in a play once.
Have you? Right, okay.
Yes, I did not master the walk, unfortunately.
Play, was it?
Yeah, it's a play. Yeah,
was it really?
Play.
I have worn them in real life.
Be more honest then.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, as a misguided 15-year-old, it was fun, but I went to a really dodgy bit of Newcastle on a night out wearing them. And I'll tell you what, having to run very quickly in those is really difficult.
But my choice is, similar to Ben's, I'm going with live animals, but much cuter animals. And you remember Paris Hilton and a tiny little handbag dog that was very popular in the 2000s? Well, when the muff was invented, the absolute peak of fashion during the 1500s in particular was to have a dog stuffed into the muff.
What?
So you would have a muff dog. Like a tiny little lap dog of some sort that the head would sort of poke out of the muff.
That's
the muff dog is definitely from the same family as the fanny pack.
Yes. Yeah. But because it would keep your hands even warmer. You had it in a muff and then there was a dog in there as well. That evolved in the 1890s into a little dog satchel because some designer very cleverly noticed that the dogs didn't have freedom to kick their legs around. So you had a little handbag with holes for the dog's feet to stick out. And so you were just carrying a handbag with the head of a dog and the legs of a dog with the body of a handbag.
Okay, when I said I like handbags, that was not what I was referring to.
What? This is so 2018, Julie. And I read a few more facts about sort of muffs in general when I was reading about this. In 1913, a Mrs. Emma Humbert was arrested at Dover for trying to smuggle a Pomeranian into the country in her muff. Celestine Galli-Marie was the first actress to play Carmen, first one to sing Carmen. And she used to carry a marmoset in her muff at all times, which is a little New World monkey. So she went one step further than the dog. She thought the dogs were too mainstream.
Horrible.
Yeah. Marmosets are more high fashion.
Yeah.
And I read about earmuffs as well. The guy who invented the earmuffs. When do you think earmuffs were invented?
Oh, I feel like they've been around in Inuit culture for centuries.
You'd imagine. No, they weren't patented until 1877, which is much more recent than I thought, by a guy called Chester Greenwood. And his hometown in Maine holds a parade in his honour every year where everyone has to wear earmuffs. And they have a coldest ears competition.
Oh,
that's adorable.
That's like the equivalent of Ed Balls Day, right, on Twitter?
Yeah, I imagine, yes. Yeah, Chester Greenwood Day. But yeah, I think in terms of animal cruelty and just sheer stupidity, the muff dog is my choice for the world's worst fashion accessory. So our candidates for the world's worst fashion accessory are Ben's suggestion of the invasive jewellery of Naomi Kishner, Tulip's suggestion of everyone's favourite, the bum bag, and my suggestion, the muff dog. This is strong work, everybody. Yeah. I have to say, I commend you all. I think for sheer visceral reaction, we both recoiled at the talk of invasive jewellery.
We did.
I confess to having about 4 bum bags at home.
I keep
all my little like plastic figurines I used to collect as a kid in.
This is why you were quiet while I was saying.
Yeah, I was just going, I love bum bags. I was like you with the leg warmers.
Yeah. Tulip's now sat there thinking, I'm going to struggle to represent this guy and what he believes in.
And much and all as I hate the muff dog, I kind of would want one. So I'm going to give the victory to Ben and Naomi Kishner's invasive jewellery. Well done, Ben.
We will.
Before we go, a quick bit of the world's worst news of the week. You may have heard of the Icelandic Phallological Museum, which is a famous museum of penises in Reykjavik in Iceland. In the news this week, it turned out that they share a building with the Reykjavik International Film Festival. The office worker who works in that particular office, Jonathan Van Hove, was really annoyed by the number of people who kept coming into his office asking, is this the penis museum? And he was moved after 3 times in one day people knocked on his door asking where the 215 types of penis were on display to put up a sign which was displayed and went viral this week. It said, this is not the penis museum. Go back to the street, turn left, walk 20 metres. It'll be on the same side. You can't miss it. It has a big penis logo. Sincerely, the people who work here. Before we go, very quickly, Tulip, where can people find out more about you and your work?
You can sign up to my newsletter, which comes out monthly, which I hope you receive, by the way.
I'm on your Twitter. I'm all over your Twitter,
good.
Of course.
So you just have to email tulip@tulipsadiq.com, or if you want to look on my website, it's www.tulipsadiq.com. There's only one MP called Tulip. You know when that thing was going around of... put your name in to see how many MPs before you share your name.
Oh, yes.
I didn't bother doing that. I don't think there's any point.
Very good. Thank you very much for being on the show, Tulip. Meanwhile, we are all off to stuff a muff dog into a bum bag. Thank you for listening to Worst Foot Forward. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bum bags and muff dogs, oh my.
I think Bum Bags and Muff Dogs should be a Hollywood epic by Cecil B. DeMille.
I think Bum Bags and Muff Dogs must be some sort of like Sheridan or Swift rebuke for like the members of Parliament.
Yes. Oh, Bum Bags and Muff Dogs, see you, right honourable gentlemen.
Westminster is filled with Bum Bags and Muff Dogs, and the lowest form of society. Not like Tulip Sadiq MP, by the way.
No, not at all.
Thank you so much to Tulip for doing the show, and thank you very much to Ollie, her assistant, who helped arrange everything and met us and gave us a little tour of the place while we were waiting for Tulip to join us.
And also, shout out to Ollie when we were chatting to him about this podcast, and we ended up talking to him about the Jim Smallman episode on Worst Wrestler. Do listen to that. Turns out that Ollie is a This Is Progress fan and a massive wrestling nerd. Yeah. So who knew that we would be sat in Portcullis House talking about Brutus Beefcake when we were just a few yards away from the leader of the opposition? Our life's fucking weird, Barry. It's
so
really weird.
Anyway, yes, do find Tulip's website, follow her on Twitter, sign up to her newsletter if you want to know what she's doing.
And Tulip is on tour in the UK.
She'll be coming to a city near you with her stand-up gig. Confessions of a Teenage Bum Bag Wearer. Listen, we have, as usual, a plea to you. Please give us your love and support online, be it on Facebook. Find us there, Worst Foot Forward, on Twitter, @WorstFoot, or send us an email to WorstFootForwardPodcast@gmail.com. As well as which, if you're listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever your podcast platform of choice is, give us a rating or a 5 stars one, ideally, or a little review, or send a link to a friend of yours and say, I've just listened to this. I know it's got a politician, it's boring, but actually it's quite funny. And spread the word, spread the good news.
If you're listening to this today, if you're one of the many excellent people who appear to listen to this podcast the moment it comes out, you'll know we are down to probably the semi-finals and the final of the World's Worst Thing. Little peek behind the curtain, guys. We're recording this a week beforehand, so we don't currently know what it is. But
there are going to be some cracking matchups.
Yeah, there are going to be some astonishing matchups. I really think February the 30th could win.
But that's when the final's scheduled to take place. Listen, if you don't know what we're talking about, just go check on our Twitter and join in belatedly if you can. Also, a quick shout out to Belgium, who've been riding very high in the charts this week in terms of our listenership numbers. Of course, the UK is where a lot of you listen to us from, and we get a lot of people in the USA as well. But Belgium are high at number 3 in the charts, putting my native Ireland to shame, who are down in 7. So if you're one of the apparently 30-odd people in Belgium, the 30-odd people in Belgium who are listening to us, then thank you very much, and we hope all is well in Bruges.
Next week, who have we got on next week, pal?
Next week, we are joined by podcasting royalty. Next week, we are joined by James Barr and Dan Hudson, who host the podcast A Gay and a Non-Gay, a show which the Radio Times calls one of the most fundamentally kind and funny podcasts in Britain. It's the number one rated LGBTQ plus podcast here. It's now available, I think, on Virgin Atlantic flights. It's one of like 3 or 4 podcasts that you can actually listen to on the plane. The boys are hilarious. They are, as the podcast title suggests, one gay and one non-gay, and they will talk about everything from cooking with semen to one person's love for Bruce Springsteen, heavy metal, and douching.
Wow, and obviously we took the template for that podcast and turned it into this one.
Yes, so the boys have joined us to talk about the world's worst friendships, so join us if Ben and I are still talking to each other.
I'm leaving! This podcast's over!
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.